I always felt there was something missing here in terms of health and fitness in the Irish industry. And I saw what it was when I went to Australia. We were very close to reaching the top of the tree. And effectively overnight, it was pulled from under us. Football gave me ability to take risks, the ability to know that actually you can come back from adverse events.
Hello and welcome to this week's episode of the Entrepreneur Experiment podcast with me, Gary Fox. This week, I'm delighted to be joined by Mark O'Reilly, the founder of Fit Vision. Mark is a former professional football player who has represented Ireland at underage levels and retired at the tender age of 22 to pursue his dream of being an entrepreneur. We chat about a huge range of topics, including indulging my boyhood dream of playing for Manchester United. And we learn about what it takes to be a professional footballer, what it means to retire at 22 and the impact that can have, and also the tools and mental models Mark has developed as a professional footballer, but also as an entrepreneur and now as someone who's pivoting his business during COVID. Mark is an extremely focused and determined entrepreneur, and I took a huge amount from this episode in terms of how I think about things and how I view things, especially during COVID and what that means for the future. This is my chat with Mark O'Reilly. Mark, welcome to the pod.
Thanks very much for having me, Gary.
We got over our initial audio difficulties via Zoom. They always have the little niggles with Zoom.
Yeah, but we're looking good now, hopefully. Fingers crossed.
And we're matching as well, unintentionally matching with the Under Armour.
Representing Under Armour this morning, yeah.
Sadly, not sponsorship. Not yet.
Not yet, there. I like your thinking.
Yeah, oh yeah, absolutely. Positive mentality. I can feel your positive energy already. Mark, give us a quick intro as to who you are and what your company does.
Yeah, so Mark O'Reilly obviously is my name. I'm managing director of Fit Vision, founder as well. We work in the corporate wellness and leadership space. So generally, we work with organizations and individuals with the goal to help them build a comprehensive guide to wellness. We're firm believers in Fit Vision that wellness effectively is the foundation for success. And obviously, it's a vast and wide-ranging topic, wellness. So we try and break it down a little bit for organizations and individuals. And we do that either online, obviously, at the moment, and pre-COVID, we did a lot of that on site with companies.
We won't mention the C word for a little bit first. We'll ease ourselves in. And we'll get there, though. We'll get there. I was trying to avoid it as much as possible, but I think it's an inevitability.
It's inevitable.
We have to address it. So kind of bring me back, I suppose, to kind of where it all started. Like, how did you get into kind of fitness, the fitness space?
Yeah, so for me, I was a former professional soccer player. And I suppose even to bring you a step before that, I had epilepsy when I was a child. So from when I was born till the age of 11, I had epilepsy. And I couldn't play any competitive sports because of the condition that I had at the time. Yeah. And lucky enough, I actually, by the age of 11, I was epilepsy free. I could start playing soccer. I had a big love for soccer. And quite disciplined approach to it from the age of maybe 10 or 11, right up, I suppose, until I retired when I was 22. And that really was the breathing ground for me around mindset and performance and the impact that it has. Because I suppose to cut a long story short, I realized that physically on the football pitch, I was the fittest individual out there. You know, nobody could keep up with me in terms of cardiovascular fitness. But where I fell down in my career was more in the mental side, is more on the mindset, developing that performance mindset, as we like to call it. So that actually drove me to start Fit Vision in the physical fitness space. So effectively starting it as a gym, but then growing it into a corporate well-being provider as I suppose, grew myself in terms of my own knowledge base and my own education. So it really was born out of that, I suppose, competitive mindset in professional sport. And I actually just realized by the age of 22 that I was juggling two passions for a long time. And I realized I wasn't going to play for Manchester United and earn the big money, if you like.
I'm glad you said that. If you said Liverpool, this is going to be the shortest podcast in history.
So I decided to go full into my other passion, which was effectively running a business, but running a business that helped influence people's lives positively.
Talk to me a bit more about the football, because obviously massive football fans. So like, talk to me about, you said professional footballer there. So talk to me kind of, I suppose, from 16 onwards, like how did you go down that path?
Yeah, so from 16 onwards, it's an interesting one, because for any young footballers, the ages of 16 to probably about 20, 21, they're vital periods, because you're either going to make it or you're not. And it's going to decide what level you're going to make it at. So effectively, I made it to the top level here in Ireland. I didn't make it across in England, although I did have some opportunities across there. And then I actually went out to Australia at 20. I got a contract to play out in Australia. And that was probably one of the best decisions that I had made, purely from the point of view of I wanted to go to a new country, actually experience what it was like to really stand on your own two feet and try and make a name for yourself somewhere else. It was a fantastic experience. I got to work in gyms and with wellness providers over there, hence the idea for Fit Vision when I came back. But what has, between 16 and 20, what did that give me in terms of that I could translate into business? Well, it gave me a real disciplined approach to the way I run my business. It helped me see that as much as, yes, life is about luck, I think for a lot of us, we can make our own luck, if you like, in terms of through our disciplined approach to work, through those extra little bits. Like, for example, with work, it might be going to that networking event, although we're not doing much of that now. When you want to go home, it's those little one percenters, those theory of, I live my life effectively on the theory of marginal gains. You know, David Brailsford, the Team
that.
Sky,
yeah. Huge
those
fan of
small
that.
Little things that you can do. And I think football brings that to life for you. It shows you that the small little things actually make all the difference when they're all added together.
How did you end up going to Australia? I'm fascinated by, like, I could probably talk soccer with you all day. I'm fascinated by how people make jumps like that. Because sometimes you see players go to Australia or to America. How did you end up going to Australia from here?
So I was playing with Bohemians, which in my family were Bohemians fanatics. So Effectively, I was living my dad's dream, if you like, playing for Bohemians. But it just got to the stage where a couple of things, I was bored here. I was working in Total Fitness actually here at the time, and they actually closed down. They went bust at the time.
Okay.
So that was
what year
one
was this?
Aspect. This was back in 2010, 2011.
Okay, yeah. So the depths of the
recession. Exactly, okay. Yeah. So I was working in Total Fitness. They went bust. I was playing in Bohemians, and like in playing in the Irish League, and I take my hat off to a lot of the players in the Irish League, because a lot of them, yes, they're getting paid to play, but they're also working in some cases full-time jobs. And it does take a hell of a lot in terms of mental and physical energy. But at the time in Bohemians, I was back, effectively substitute right back for the best right back who ever played in the league, effectively, Owen Heary. And he'd another 3 or 4 years left in him. So It was either move to another club in Ireland, stay and fight for your position, knowing that it's going to be tough to dislodge this person. Or the third option is go to Australia. People have gone before you. There's good, in terms of the soccer over there, It revenue-wise, it's quite good, but also just that whole aspect of living in another country and the challenge that it brought to me, it just really appealed to me. So a couple of things lined up, but ultimately it was that challenge that really appealed to me to get over there and test myself.
What was your daily routine like as a professional footballer and working? Because I think I definitely guilty of this, when you see a professional sports player, whether it's GA or soccer here, or, you know, while you're professional, I don't think people realize you actually might be working as well. So what was your day and week like?
Yeah, and it's funny that you say that, Gary, because I think when we even think of Olympic athletes and you think of people who are, a lot of them are holding down another job while they're also training to try and, you know, whether to even make the team for the Olympics. So what my day-to-day looked like, being a semi-professional soccer player when I went to Australia, when I got there, I just wanted to try and network with as many people as I could. So my day over there, the gyms are open 5 a.m. So you're up at 4 a.m. You're getting into the gym at 5 a.m. I used to work in the gym till about maybe 2 p.m. I used to leave and go coaching soccer in a private school in Hunters Hill in Sydney called St. Joseph's. And then I used to go from my soccer coaching to my soccer training. So my day, I left at 4 a.m. and I'd get back at about maybe 8 p.m. Monday to Friday. I'd work in the gym on a Saturday and I'd have a game on a Sunday. So at the time, I went across with my girlfriend at the time, and God love her, I think she used to see me for a couple of hours a week.
How did you balance your mental energy and physical energy? Because that's hugely taxing.
Yeah. So the truth is, in a lot of cases, I didn't. A lot of cases, I was mentally and physically burnt out, but I didn't have the self-awareness to actually say, Mark, hold on here a minute. You know, this is not sustainable. As much as you're young and you're ambitious, there has to be some downtime here. You can't achieve everything in 1 year. You know, and ultimately that is what drove me back home, was I was completely mentally and physically fatigued. In my opinion, I had succeeded in my year, but there was nothing left in the tank. And that was down to living exactly how I've explained for an extended period of time. And I think that's one of the biggest things that running a business will teach you, is the importance of that self-reflection and managing your own energy. It sounds ironic because effectively that's what I do now on a day-to-day with all
of
my
clients.
Well, you've
lived it. You know exactly. I think that's the thing. You've lived exactly what most people coming to you are probably doing, is in burning the candle at both ends with tax and jobs, and then kind of leaving fitness as like the lowest thing on the rung.
Yeah, and it's an easy thing to do when we think about it, because when we're in that high stress environment, as much as we're doing things that we love, there's a lot of stress involved in that, a lot of adrenaline, a lot of cortisol. And what was really interesting for me is when I started to look more into the idea of neuroscience and what effectively dictates the choices we make. And then we realize when we look at something like our prefrontal cortex, which effectively is where all our rational thinking takes place. And then I think back to those days where I used to leave at 4 a.m. and not get back till 9 a.m. Well, effectively what I was doing was blunting that logical part of my brain, that part of my brain that would have been able to say to me, Mark, you are going to burn out here. You need to stop. Mm. But I was just running on adrenaline all through the day because, yes, I was getting to do what I love to do. I had that sense of identity that I was effectively carrying not just myself, but my partner and my family on my shoulders as I went through my days in Australia. So there was a lot of energy out of that. But ultimately, we have to find how to balance that energy, because it can't be all effectively deposits without any investments, if you like.
Mm. And when did you realize that? When did you kind of come to that realization of, like, because I remember when I was in college, you were playing sport like every day. I'm like, yeah, absolute garbage. Like, yeah, I remember, like, literally you come home, you put on a pizza and a tin of beans on top of it. And you're like, and you're still playing football twice a day. And it just makes no sense. And I look back at it now, I'm like, what was I doing? Like, I'm just literally eating garbage. Like, but like, when did you have that realization of, okay, this is going to end badly?
I'd love to say when I came back from Australia that was the sign for me to, you know, make changes. But believe it or not, it was numerous years later before I actually realized it for myself, because I went from that environment to then deciding that when I came back from Australia, I retired from football. I had a couple of offers here, but it was all part-time, and I wanted to really commit myself fully to Fit Vision and starting that off. I had an idea for how I knew I wanted it to look, and I knew the work it was going to take. So effectively, that threw me into same routine, but everything was work-related. So think of that schedule I mentioned in Australia. I just turned that schedule into Fit Vision all the time, Monday to Saturday, finishing up at 4 o'clock on a Saturday, taking, you know, a bit of time off. And ultimately what happened, and I'm sure there's people listening in on this who can relate to this, what I noticed was that my identity completely became Fit Vision. I was Fit Vision. And it was little subtle things that I only pick up on now that I've made changes that were probably screaming at me at the time. Like, I had the identity from my friends of, oh, he never sleeps. You're the guy who never sleeps. Mm. You know, it's just, he can run on 5 hours sleep, 4 hours sleep. Nobody can actually do that.
It's self-fulfilling then as well, because then you want to live up to that in your head. You want to go, well, that's me. That's my identity now.
Exactly. You're 100% right, Gary. And then just to fast forward, even in the place I'm in now versus back then, like, a lot of those friends are I'm no longer in contact with. Why? Because they got sick of just being, you know, around the guy who just all he talked about was work and all he did was work. And listen, you know, it takes you a couple of years to hit that point. But what allowed me to do it was that I just became very unhappy. I just became very unhappy with, as much as the business was progressing really well, because everything was invested in the business in terms of me and my identity. If I had a bad day in business, it was like when I used to have a bad game when I played soccer. You couldn't speak to me for a week. If I had a good day in business, you know, all of a sudden everything was better. Everything was right. And I got a great bit of advice from one of my mentors. And it was the idea that you have to be able to modularize the highs and the lows in business. And that's the only way that you can really have longevity. It's when you have a bad day, don't get too carried away, but also view good day as the same. Celebrate your wins, but don't get carried away. But try tell that to somebody whose whole identity is based around their business. So it took me a couple of years to realize that actually there's a hell of a lot more to life, Mark, than just having a successful business. There's a hell of a lot more to you and your identity than just Fifth Vision. And it's really time to start exploring that, because, you know, at the time I was probably 25, 26, and I'd lost touch with a lot of people that I effectively didn't want to lose touch with. Yeah.
Go back to when you came back from Australia. You mentioned two things there. They're pretty important. You decided to retire at 22. Like, surely that's a tough choice.
Yeah, it's a very tough choice, because when we talk of that identity piece, my identity from the age of 11 to 22 was the footballer. I was the footballer who was going to make it across in England. And your whole family then are not relying on you, but they're speaking highly of you because you are this talented football player. And for a long time, you are solely committed to that endeavor. Like, I think I had my first drink when I was 21, okay. Right? First alcoholic drink, because I was getting to the stage in my career that I knew that Alex Ferguson wasn't knocking on my door, if you like. But I've also been, I suppose, throughout my life, I'm an optimist realist, if you like. I knew that I wasn't going to make it at the level that my commitment and my discipline would match, if you like. I wanted to be at the top. And if I wasn't at the top, well, listen, I was happy enough to walk away. And I was happy enough to walk away because I had something else. It was a really tough decision. Like, my younger brother at the time was making his inroads in his career, and he's 5 years younger than me. And this will show you how tough it was. In the first 2 years that I retired, I couldn't go and watch him. And this was very selfish on my part, but I couldn't go and watch him play in the League of Ireland, because for me, it was just too painful going into those stadiums and thinking about everything that you gave your life to, and it's not there. It's not a part of you anymore. So again, it was a bit of a healing process when you retire from football at a young age, knowing that you could give it another go, but also knowing that you're
so young. Like, 22 is really, really young. I suppose in football terms, you knew, okay, I'm not going to be at the elite. So but still, at 22 is so young. Did you have at 22 where you're like, I don't know what I'm going to do? Or did you always kind of have this burn in the back of your mind going, you know what, I think there's something there?
Yeah, to be honest, I always knew. I always had a vision of what I was going to do, because I remember even when I started my semi-pro career at 17, I had a personal training business on the side. So I would effectively be doing both. And I've always done both. I've always wanted to. I've always loved learning. And for me, my career in terms of the training and the mental skills, and that always actually tied back to football. And everything I learned in that area helped me on the pitch. But I could also then share that knowledge with teammates and kind of become that figure within the team where people could effectively go to you for advice on weight training or nutrition or, you know, mentally getting prepped for a game. So it was the idea that I always knew that's where I was going to end up. And it's funny, because why did I make the decision at 22? I always say I knew I wasn't going to make it at the top level. But also, the other side of it was, I would have been bored just being a footballer. And that's no disrespect to any football players. But just that idea of training every single day, it just didn't appeal to me anymore. And I know this is something you speak about quite a lot with your guests, Gary, but I knew it wouldn't have made me happy. I knew it didn't align anymore to what I really value and what challenged me as an individual. So it was time for me to get out, because football is a hard game. And if you don't love it anymore, it's time to really decide, right, I need to go and follow whatever I'm passionate about now.
And then you came back, 22. What happened then? Was Fit Vision something you kind of had worked on in, obviously you'd been working on it in a guise, I suppose, since 17, but what was the direction you took when you came back?
So I was actually very lucky when I was in Australia. I got to work with a company over there, aptly named Fission Personal Training. So hopefully they're not listening at the moment, but they won't mind. I'm still in close contact with a lot of them from that company. But I tell you what, it opened my eyes to just everything in terms of their programming, their values, how they trained and coached people. It just let me see that, because I always felt there was something missing here in terms of health and fitness in the Irish industry. And I saw what it was when I went to Australia. So straight away, I had a business model in mind when I came back. I'd saved a lot of money. I knew what it was I wanted to do. And I actually put myself out there as well. So I actually developed a business plan around well-being for organizations. And I was very lucky that at the time I was working one-to-one with Paul Marchant, who's CEO of Primark. And like, what a visionary in terms of the CEO. And I said to him, listen, Paul, I've got this idea that I'd like to run by you. They were renovating their head office at the time. I've got this idea around corporate well-being and the benefits. Can I present it to you? He said, yes, absolutely.
What year is it?
This would have been probably 2014. So I'm back about a year close to 2 years at this stage.
Okay. So like, yeah, 2014, probably corporate wellness was still pretty new. Was that a new concept back then?
Yeah, absolutely. There was very little here. Like companies, the bigger companies, the tech companies were starting to put in on-site gyms, but effectively they were putting in these gyms and not connecting the dots, if you like. Mm. It was, here's a gym, use it if you like. But actually, where we were coming at it from a different angle was, if you're lucky enough to have a space like this on site, let's maximize it. Think of every other touch point that we can have around this gym facility in terms of physical, mental, emotional, and spiritual well-being for your employees. We can effectively help make wellness a cultural priority. And it can start from this space that you've built. It's not just a gym.
So you were chatting to CEO of Primark, pretty big client to have, and you pitched it to him. And what was his initial reaction?
Yeah, he liked it. So he made me effectively go through the right processes. So we had to tender in front of effectively the board. So it was ourselves and a couple of other companies. Now, we were lucky we got in there early with our first proposal, if you like. But it was, again, at 24, it's a great experience to go into a room full, effectively a board, and pitch this idea of corporate wellness. And listen, to say that there wasn't some cynics in that room, I'd be lying. Mm. Some of them looking, sitting across from me saying, you know, this guy, what's he talking about? You know, we do, there's a certain way we do things around here. I was just lucky that in that room, there was more people who believed in this idea than the cynics. And like, we look at it now, we're 7 years on with Primark, and just the impact that it's had and the impact they've had on us as well. It's been such a rewarding partnership for me to actually be so close with a company that has such an influence across the globe. And I'm very thankful and very grateful that effectively Paul at the time and his board, they took a chance on us. You know, at the time in business, it was me and two other people in the team. Like, were we going to be able to manage this gig as well as manage our own premises that we just opened the year before in Balls Bridge? Who knew? But I was up for the challenge, and yeah, they were willing to take the chance with us as well.
I think you need that naivety. You need that belief that, yeah, anything is possible. Anything.
Yeah, and you're right, Gary. And I think, you know, people often would say, like, what did football give you in terms of, football gave me that, not naivety, but it gave me that ability to take risks, the ability to know that actually you can come back from adverse events. And that's something that I've really been able to take into my business life so far.
And what was your vision for corporate wellness? Because I think speaking about it now, it's very obvious. It's one of those ideas now that you're kind of going, of course, yeah, of course, you need corporate wellness. But even like 6 years ago, which isn't that long ago, but I think back then it probably was a relatively new concept. So how did you know, what was your, I don't want to use the word vision, but what was your dream? Like, how did you map that out? How did you know what you wanted to do?
So for me, it was looking at the individuals within organizations. It was looking at, on top of their workload, and I could relate because we've spoken about the schedule, if you like, and the stresses that come with that kind of a schedule. Like, I was doing that, but I was in the fitness industry. I had knowledge around nutrition. I had knowledge around mindset and exercise and how much was needed, etc. And then I looked at these executives who were doing effectively that crazy schedule of up early, go, 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 get home. But the part they were missing was they didn't have knowledge around nutrition, exercise, mental skills. And just the thought of being able to translate that into a language which they understood, they could actually take hold of, make their own. And as we mentioned at the start, build that comprehensive guide to their own personal wellness. So my vision was that you could have an impact right down to the individual level within an organization, because it's great if it impacts the organization itself. And obviously they're going to want to know, listen, what is effectively the return on investment here? But with wellness, you have to actually look at the value of investment versus the return on investment. Because yes, we have corporate well-being apps now that will tell you levels of engagement, etc. But for me, it's actually on the individual. Like, what impact are we having on the individuals within an organization? And if somebody understands how to better manage their own well-being, understands when they're having a day where they know they need to take a step back, but they take that step back. That was my vision, was just to be able to create that self-awareness around well-being for individuals.
So talk me through then the first kind of year, I suppose, because I think that's always the trickiest part when you're figuring out where the dots join together. What was your first kind of steps with Primark and other clients then?
Yeah, so it's really, first of all, getting an insight into the organization. So really understanding what type of individuals work here, because you can't have a one-size-fits-all program. It's going to be completely different. Like, when I look at our range of clients now, we've obviously got Primark, but we've got Oracle, we've got McCann Fitzgerald, we do work with Indeed. If you don't consider what the day-to-day schedule is like for these individuals, well, then you're setting your program up for low engagement and effectively failure. So that first year with Primark looked at a lot of steering groups, a lot of time on site, a lot of finding out what it is you know about wellness. What do you think wellness is? What would you like in your wellness program? Because then they looked at the program as, we've really contributed to setting this up. And they've always been our steering group. So I think for me, the first and most important part is you get buy-in from the people effectively who are going to be using your product. So we had to get on site with them, find out what they wanted, and create those relationships that stand to us today, because we're now in an online world, but we still have tons of people from Primark logging on to online classes, because over the years we've really tried to nurture that relationship. And listen, I'm not going to say that there was 20, 25 people in every class when we started. It was a real struggle to get people to even come to fitness classes. Never mind.
I was going to ask you that. How, because like it sounds great when you're telling me about it, but like, you know, how did people adopt it? Like, was it, you know, there's obviously a few people who are really keen early adopters, but was it hard to get it like critical mass?
Yeah, I think whenever you're bringing something in new like that, as we know, as human beings, we don't like change. So anything that's a little bit different, we take our time, we dip our toe in the water a little bit. The biggest insight for me was across the first year when we started. The big thing people said was, I don't want to, you know, change into my training gear and, you know, with other colleagues. And I feel, you know, a little bit maybe self-conscious. And then by the end of that year, we had gotten, I think it was 20 to 25 individuals from Primark to do their first triathlon.
Oh, wow.
And I remember we're all standing on the side of the pool, and one of them said to me, Mark, I can't believe that I was worried about colleagues seeing me in a pair of leggings. And here I am now standing in my swimsuit about to jump in. But for me, what that spoke to was this idea of we help them connect with the reason to do it. Like initially it was the external, oh my God, somebody will see me in my training gear. And then all of a sudden it was actually, this fits my lifestyle now. It's on site. I can do it. It actually helps me stay more tuned in for the course of the day. I have more energy. I actually feel better in myself. I get along better with my colleagues when I start the day with a with an exercise class, for example. So for me, it was the idea they started to look inwards at the benefits rather than just focusing on, oh God, what might a colleague think of me in training gear effectively.
But how did you scale up as you yourself and two other people? Like that seems like a big project to take on, and you're also managing premises in Ballsbridge as well.
Yeah. So at the time we had our premises in Ballsbridge, and we weren't just doing work with Primark at this stage, because we had taken the same Primark template and we'd pushed it out to other organizations. And we started at the time doing a lot of work with Irish Life as well, who'd be another great client of ours. So I had a template effectively. I had a way, although I'd never ask somebody to, you know, be a mini me or your style. You have to model your style exactly on me, because I think people need that autonomy in work. They need to feel like they can bring their own style to it. But I had effectively a base model on what I found made the business successful so far. And it was things like personality. Like you didn't have to have all of the letters after your name to come in to be a coach within Fit Vision, but you did have to have a personality in which you knew the client effectively was king. And what I mean is that we needed to consider and walk in the client's shoes on a daily basis. It didn't matter what you knew. It's what the actual client understood when you were speaking to them. So as trainers, as we grew, I brought in trainers that understood that concept, that had that outgoing personality where they were able just to catch up with somebody. And simple things like, you know, what did you do over the weekend? And, you know, how's your kids? And it's these things that help people feel. And it's, I love the old saying of, you know, people will forget what you say, but they'll remember how you made them feel. And effectively, we've tried to build Fit Vision and scale Fit Vision based on that, making people feel and connect with us. And yes, that becomes difficult in today's world, but we've had technology in terms of we've had apps that we use within different organizations. But for me, it's just important never to lose that on site, that high touch aspect of what you do, because especially with something like wellness, trust is such a big part of it. And I find it very hard to create that trust if you haven't got a personal relationship with an individual.
I love that phrase. It's one of my, I only read it in a book again this week. It's one of my favorite phrases. It's so true. And it's, I think in a lot of industries, the standard is pretty low in terms of the service industry and stuff like that. It's pretty low, especially in Ireland. We're a little bit cynical. We're a little bit kind of like you're grand.
Yes.
So how did you not replicate yourself, but how did you keep that standard throughout Fit Vision? I can see your passion about that, but how did you keep that with as you got bigger? Obviously you scaled quite quickly. How did you keep that? I think that's what a lot of owners struggle with, is that, oh, I can't replicate myself. And they struggle with that, getting that through their head.
Yeah, I think the best bit of advice I got around this, Gary, was it was one of my, again, I'm lucky to have clients that become mentors in a way. All those training sessions I did with them, effectively you're trying to get more and more information out of them. So it's nice. It's a nice little transaction to be taken part in. But one of the best bits of advice I got was, remember, you don't have a business if your business solely is reliant on you. So if you decide you want to go away for a week and you've got to tell all your clients, I'm not here, or, well, then you don't have a business. You're self-employed effectively. And what I mean by that is you have to take the time to build systems and, you know, simple things like, you know, even down to training manuals on what do I do in this scenario. And actually then there's two aspects of this. You ensure that the people you bring into your organization, they understand in terms of when they're client facing what's expected of them. But also they need to understand the theory, but they also need to see it in practice. So they need to see effectively what is the standard that's expected of me in this area. So I would have made sure with every person who came into our team that whether it was a class, whether it was a webinar, whether it was a one-to-one coaching session, before they did that themselves, they actually viewed either myself or one of the senior team members doing that. Because it was that idea of, that is our standard in Fit Vision, and we don't accept anything less. Now, we will help train and develop you because we feel you're the right person. But the last thing we want you to do is turn around and say to us, yeah, I'm ready to do that. And then we get feedback that it wasn't at the standard that's expected. Because there's another great saying where if you accept a standard that's below what you effectively say your standard is, and you don't call it, you don't actually try and rectify it, well, you have a new standard in your business. So I think how you go about setting that standard, and yes, it's good to throw people into the deep end so they learn, but also you want them to be confident walking into that. You don't want to say, yeah, you're here a week now, I'm going to throw you in to do a webinar for 100 employees in Indeed. Like, what will they learn from that effectively? Yes, they might learn a bit, but is it fair to throw them in without giving them... Like, I love the idea of when we talk about delegation. I would talk about delegation a lot with some of the people that I work with, some of the clients. And it's that differentiation between delegating and giving somebody a training opportunity. If you give somebody a training opportunity, you're guiding them, you're mentoring them through the process. You're there in case anything goes wrong. If you're delegating something to somebody, well, then you're effectively saying, I know that you know the standard that's expected and I don't need to watch over your shoulder. I don't need to micromanage you. I trust you. And that gives, for an individual, that's very empowering for an employee. But that doesn't happen overnight. It certainly didn't happen for us overnight. So we had to ensure that there was that effectively, the quality standards were there, not just on the theory side, but also in the day-to-day practice for the individuals coming into the organizations.
Was that a mix of shadowing and documentation, or how did that work? Because I think that's something... all small business owners, and that's specifically why I asked that question. I think everyone struggles with that going from 1 to 2, 2 to 3, 3 to 4. I think that pinch point at the start. So was it shadowing or what was it?
No, it is. And it's a mixture, Gary. It's exactly what you said there. It's about having the journey mapped out for the individual when they come in. So what makes the difference between somebody in Fit Vision who is a wellness coach versus a trainer? Well, there's steps that you have to take in order to go from being a trainer, which is where you would join the company normally, and then you will work your way up to becoming a wellness coach. So it is documented for them, but there's a lot of shadowing involved. But then I think the piece that's very important, which we miss out on a lot, is the reflection piece, both self-reflection for the individual, but also then you taking time as a mentor to sit with an individual and say, you know, this is what I thought you did very, very well. This is where I think you need to improve. And it's funny because that sounds so simple, but you try and be an individual running a business, working tons of hours a day. The last thing that you effectively think or want to do is maybe sit down with a new hire and go, okay, listen, this is what you did well today. But trust me, any small business owners listening to this, when you do that, in the long run, you actually save yourself so much time. And you also find out who's ready to go to bat with you, if you like, who's ready to get into the trenches with you. Because I've seen over the past couple of months, the guys in our team who literally would jump in the trenches with you and stay here till all hours if needs be in order to try and find a solution to the problem. And for small businesses, that is just, God, that is vital.
So you're 6 years on the go now. So like we've kind of jumped from year one. So how did the business grow? Like, was it organic? Was it word of mouth? How did you spread the Fit Vision?
Yeah, I think to sum it up, it would be tough to sum it up in just one or two ways. I think definitely as your business grows, word of mouth starts to spread. You know, when you have satisfied clients, they talk to other organizations, and that certainly is a help. But also, in any business, you have to have a strategy around sales and marketing. You have to be very clear on what your message is. But you also have to remember, like, sales is a tricky process for small businesses, because small business owners from time to time can feel like they're you know, it's a bit of a burden. Oh, I'm chatting to somebody here and I'm trying to sell myself. And it's different because you're not going in and saying, here's this product, here's what it does, buy it off us. You're effectively going in and saying, this is what we do, this is how I feel it can help, and your individuals can benefit from this. Take a chance on it. And I think for me, it was really coming to terms with that was the difference between what my industry is and what my business was. And then everything had to effectively follow suit with that in mind. That how do I grow this business? Well, I need to get client testimonials. How do I grow this business? Well, I need to share things on LinkedIn and Instagram and try and appeal to the market that's out there. I need to be lining up catch-up calls with other organizations on a regular basis. And when you're doing that on top of all of the other things that you're doing, yes, it can be exhausting. But to grow the business, it just needed to be front and center. It needed to always be a focus. It needed to have targets. It wasn't the idea that we were thinking, oh, if we get a new client this week, great. Like, we were definitely exceeding what my expectations were, but still it was important to evaluate those targets on a regular basis, because if we're doing well, it's time to increase that target. It's time to set that bar a little bit higher. So in terms of growing the business, it's really about making it a clear focus on what success looks like as you continue to grow.
So you obviously, you've made it 6 years and then this year happened. So kind of bring me up to speed, catch me up, I think, since January, February this year, just kind of talk me through where you were and then the impact that March had.
Yeah, it's funny because I'm going to be really honest on this one, Gary. The mission we set out for in Fit Vision at the start was to be the main well-being provider across Ireland and the UK. We cracked into the UK with Primark and we'd a couple of other clients in the UK. And here in Ireland, we were in talks with some very big organizations to start doing exactly what we do for Primark and Oracle and all the other organizations. So we were very close to effectively reaching the top of the tree in my eyes, in what we had set out to achieve.
Okay.
And effectively overnight, a lot of it was literally pulled from under us. So I'd be lying here if I was to say that that didn't hit me initially. It didn't make me go, the world is unfair, right? You start to find yourself in your own bubble thinking, oh God, how has this happened? And what are we going to do? But it's the idea that you have to realize you can't stay there forever. You have to realize that we were speaking about it beforehand. We've no control over what's going on at the moment, but we've a lot of control over what we decide to do about it. So not to use the overused word at the moment, but we pivoted very quickly into the online. What can we do online? How can we be creative online while still actually aligning with our values? So some of our customers were like, Mark, listen, whatever you do, we're up for it. You send us an idea, we are game ball, because it was the idea that you've had such a strong relationship with them that they wanted to help you out as well. But it was about being creative at this moment in time. We've come up with a lot of different solutions. For me, it's about staying in that positive mindset. We know that it's going to come back eventually. And when it comes back, we're going to have so many other streams of the business, so many other ways in which we create revenue in the business. And that's what we're using this time for, both as a business, but even myself as an individual. For years, I was saying that I wanted to do a master's. I've actually signed up to my master's now for next year, which again is something I know I would not have done if it wasn't for the last couple of months. So I think, are we in a good position in Fit Vision? We absolutely are, because we've got some loyal customers who we are serving very well at the moment, and we're growing our new offerings into other businesses. But do I look back the odd time and think, wow, how much has it changed? Absolutely I do, because primarily...
How did you manage that transition? Because clearly you were all on site, you're all hands-on, you know, doing classes and doing wellness events. How did you manage that transition across?
First of all, I think you just have to say, listen, we have to do this. Like, this is not a, oh, will we, or we have to do it. So you have to switch into that mindset of solution focused rather than constantly focusing on the problem. And then it's about remembering that you've got a team of individuals with you. You've got a team of individuals who now their whole work day has been completely disrupted. And for the first couple of months, that is probably the thing that took the most energy from me, was making sure they were okay, making sure they were able to deal with the current circumstances. Like, in the initial stages, we hadn't got enough work for a lot of the individuals in the team. So my solution was, okay, what could you do in a different area of the business where you can learn a new skill, but also offer us value? So we now have guys who were primarily trainers before COVID, who now can edit our videos online, who can now run our social media accounts, who can now, like, so for me, it was making sure that they still had a sense of worth in what they did now that everything was gone. Because if we're all in that creative space together, we have a much better chance of trying to come up with innovative ideas and survive. And it's making sure that as a group, like, I remember in one team meeting, one of the individuals in the team, and this guy is the most motivated guy you'll ever meet, incredible guy. And he turned around and said a statement. It was, yeah, we just need to survive this next couple of weeks. And it was just the idea of having to just, in the nicest way possible, stop right there and say, guys, this isn't about surviving the next couple of weeks, because if we have that mentality, we are done. We need to accept that what we used to do is not needed anymore, but we still have a lot of qualities as a group of individuals. We still know what our values are. We know what we can offer. So let's take that to an online world and let's try and do that as fast as we can. And let's thrive in this time so that when everything does go back to normal, as I've said, we have a different stream of things that we offer now. And all of a sudden, as a company, we are just so more well-rounded than we were previously.
How did you get there yourself, though? Because that sounds great and that sounds like very inspiring stuff, but it's often not that easy for people in terms of kind of going, right, this is a real, we talked about it previously, like the world is so uncertain. So how did you proceed with such certainty yourself? Personally, mentally, how did you get there yourself? Because I think that's where a lot of people are still struggling in terms of, oh, you know, level 3, level 4, level 5, my business is affected now this way, next week it's going to be this way. So how did you get there, get that certainty?
I think one thing that we don't do as individuals, and we've talked about it a little bit here, is the idea of reflection and just reflecting back on other times where you've overcome adversity. And I don't want to sound too like cliche when I say this, but the only way we can face into the likes of COVID and the uncertainty is by knowing that we've overcome certain things in the past. But we often live our lives very future focused. We often live our lives in, okay, well, what does that mean for next week and 2 weeks and 3 weeks? But what we need to do is actually look back and say, right, where can I say that I faced something like this? Although we've never faced anything quite like this, where have I faced things similar and I've overcome them? And that's really what helped me shift my mindset. Because if I think back, and just to give you a brief story, I wanted to back again with soccer. I wanted to play for Ireland, as every young guy growing up would.
You dodged a bullet there. I watched their match the other night. You dodged a massive bullet there.
But just a quick one, right? When I was 18, I got the chance to play for Ireland after never making the squad beforehand.
Wow.
And as things go, we played our first game against Wales in Wales. And I lost my man in the first couple of minutes. He scored a goal. So like a crazy man, I wanted the ball. I wanted to make amends for my mistake. I did my cruciate knee ligament because of that in that game. Wow. Right? So gone.
Your first Ireland game.
First Ireland game after waiting the guts of 6-7 years, right? Now, I knew the time frame of my rehab, and I knew that if I really looked after myself, I could get back for the last game of that tournament, which was against England. So went through the rehab, was lucky enough to be fit enough to get back in for that last game. Now, those months of rehab were so, so tough, right? Yeah. It literally tested everything in me, mentally, physically. But I got back for that last game. Long story short, we won the game 1-0 in England. We won the tournament. I got to play against players whose names you would all know very well today, the likes of Chris Smalling and Ross Barkley, all these players.
Wow. Big name players.
Yeah. But it was making sure that I carried that experience to the next chapter of my life and the next chapter. And if I go even further back, like my family, I come from a family where my dad worked two jobs. The man very rarely slept. It's remembering that. It's remembering, not that that's a smart thing to do, right? But like sometimes you just have to do it because if you don't, well, what's going to be the alternative? Like we can all sit around and say how bad COVID is and read the media and say, oh my, like, but ultimately we're only sitting in a hole, if you like, and hoping somebody's going to come along and save us. And the reality of life is the only person that can save you is yourself. And that really is a mantra that I would live my life by. As much as I do depend on others, I'm not this individual who just is self-sufficient. And like, I would be lost without my fiance. I'd be lost without my parents. I'd be lost without some of my really good friends. And that's okay to admit as well. But there are certain things around responsibility versus blame. And I think that's a great way to put it, is to remember that you are responsible for yourself. There's a great Buddhist parable where it talks about the first arrow and the second arrow. And the first arrow, for example, would be COVID. We've no control over it. The second arrow is how we decide to respond. And often many of us actually get more pain from the second arrow because we decide that this is a disaster. There's no solution. And before we know it, we're just creating a massive internal environment of anxiety and stress. And bringing it back to that point we made at the start, we're totally not being able to tap into that prefrontal cortex, that rational brain. Because you talk about it a lot, Gary, on the podcast. Like sometimes being on our own and having that thinking time, that can be the scariest time of the day for us.
Yep. It's that, and that's why people don't do it anymore. The phone, it's a killer, and it's something I'm working on all the time. Just, we're never alone now. We're never alone just for our thoughts. We're never alone in a room. We're never alone just staring at the wall. You know, not that that sounds great, but you're constantly stimulated by external things, and people come focused on, we talked about earlier, about external factors, the news, COVID, external, instead of the internal.
Yeah. Like for me as well, Gary, just to give people, any listeners here, just a brief, I suppose, day-to-day action that they can do. Like, if we look at it, we wake up first thing in the morning, we pick up the phone, we see something we don't like, we're starting into our day in a sense of anxiety, a high state of arousal. Now, if we start our day in that fashion, we're only doomed to go through our day reacting rather than responding. So one thing I would do every morning, and I recommend it to all of my clients, is to just do what we call an emotional pulse. Check in for 15 minutes. Take yourself into your living room, sit down on the couch or sit down on a comfortable cushion, close your eyes and just ask yourself, how am I feeling today? Is there anything from yesterday that I haven't resolved in my mind? What about today? What am I anxious about today? And it's just incredible how that 10 to 15 minutes for somebody, because you're getting a different perspective on things. It's the idea again of, am I dealing in fact or am I dealing in fiction here? Mm-hmm. If I'm dealing in, and there's a really interesting study, it was a 2010 study, Killingworth and Gilbert are the researchers, but they looked at how much we focus on things that aren't happening. So things that potentially won't happen.
Yeah.
And we actually spend as much time focusing on that as we do focusing on things that are happening. And that leads to an unhappy mind.
Tiny shadows becoming big shadows. Like literally had that conversation with someone this week. It's, especially now, it's like, this is not going to happen. This is going to happen. Or we're going to go to level 5. There's going to be no Santi. It's just craziness. Like this doom of like, it's like going to the dentist. I always equate that back to people going, you know, you go to the dentist and you're worried about it for weeks and you go and it's like, yeah, it's all right. Everything. You send that story to me. I'll link it actually in the show notes, because definitely in the pod, I'm trying not to focus too much on COVID, but I'm also trying to focus now on dealing with it. And that's why having someone like yourself on is so important, because I think especially now people are having that second wave of anxiety, and that exactly what you're talking about there, those external focuses. And it's funny you mentioned that. I'm literally just flicking back 2 pages in my notebook here and looking back to what, like, my weekly intentions. I saw Pat Dively do it last night. I had him on a few weeks ago. It's really good. And I literally wrote down no social media until after 9 a.m. and none after 6 p.m. And just doing that little thing in the morning, no phone, like having no phone until at least after nine. It's a huge difference. It's a massive difference because I think it's just an automatic reaction. Now, as you say, the hand goes out of the bed, grab the phone, WhatsApp, Instagram, email, and then suddenly all the thoughts are racing through your head after having a restful sleep. Like, I think especially
now. And just another one, Gary, I think to speak to that is, and this is, I find this helpful for myself when I'm trying to avoid social media and you know, spending too much time on them, because there is some benefits. Obviously, you can connect with friends, etc. But it's the idea to remember that our thinking is effectively an unconscious process a lot of the time. A lot like breathing. So when do we become aware of our breath? When we're short of breath and we're in a room that doesn't have enough oxygen, or we're wearing our face masks, walking around the streets. Well, our thinking works in the same way. Mm. A lot of the time we just blunt that thinking process through social media, through the internal need for distraction. But what happens is, a lot of the time our thinking process could be creating a lot of emotional turmoil that we're not picking up. So when you say, Mark, what would be the benefit maybe for somebody sitting for 15 minutes before they start their day? Well, they're starting to become aware of their thought process. Is it negative? Is it positive? It's the same way if you sit and breathe for 15 minutes, all of a sudden you've gone from a maybe increased heart rate and blood pressure to a slower heart rate, more relaxed, more of a sense of calm. So it's the idea that not just physiologically do we need to do that, but cognitively we need to do that. So unplugging every now and again is through the day is so important, because we're not like batteries on our phone. Mm-hmm. We don't plug ourselves in at night, get 7 hours sleep and wake up feeling great the next day. Yeah, most of us wake up feeling actually quite groggy and not very rested. Why? Mm. Because we have all of this stuff in our mind and our subconscious mind working while we're trying to sleep.
I use the analogy of, like, you know, when your MacBook fills up and it's like, oh, no more space. I was using that analogy with someone this week. I was like, that's the exact same. I think that's how we're all feeling now, going, oh, just adding stuff in all the time and you're just not giving it a chance to get the external hard drive out and just back up some of that stuff. Very just good. Let it go off. It's a mad time. What are you doing personally? How do you, because you're clearly a very driven, motivated dude. So how can people tap into a little bit of Mark? How can they get what can they do? Like, what are simple things? Like, you've said one of them there, like, what do you do? What's your daily routine?
For me, it's, and I suppose it runs across three streams, and we spoke a lot about the identity piece. So I think what I make sure I do on a day-to-day basis is question around, you know, who, and I know it sounds, but who am I today? You know, am I stepping into today with an old script, with something that maybe doesn't add up anymore? And what I mean is, as we enter into our day, depending on what happened the day before, we could be carrying some of that in. That could evoke some past memories, some past feelings. So it's checking back in with that identity quite early on. I try and do that in my 15 minutes of the day. I try and stay away from all distractions for the first 15 to 20 minutes of my day. If that means that I have to get up a little bit earlier to get that 15 to 20 minutes, I do it, because I just realize how much it helps me as I go through the course of the day. So being clear in terms of that sense of identity is a massive piece for me. I think as we go through the day as well, it's as much as you want to be focused and focus your attention on the most important tasks like work, you can't just go from 7 in the morning till 7 in the evening and be in work mode. It's this idea of, you have to know that the more you're in that performance zone, the more important it is to tap into your recovery zone. So it's little things like making sure I take time out during the day to actually give myself, replenish that mental and physical energy a little bit. I call it, and I've heard this one from, I think it's Brendan Bouchard, he talks about managing your transitions throughout the day. So the importance of actually managing your transitions throughout the day, because your transitions effectively can become moments of procrastination. So you can have 15 minutes and you take out your phone and you're scrolling for 15 minutes and then you think, oh God, why did I do that? You know? And then I suppose the ultimate piece for me, and I think this is a piece listeners can take away, it's being really clear on your idea of success. And what I mean is, we have this idea of what success looks like, and it's needs to make, we need to make sure that that is based on our identity and nobody else's. But then we have our day-to-day practice. So Gary, you might say, I don't want to be near my phone for the course of the day in terms of social media. But yeah, your day-to-day practice might look like that you scroll a couple of times during the day, which is completely human nature. Now, what most people do is they talk about trying to close that gap. How do I close the gap between what I'm doing at the moment and what I feel guilty about and actually what I know I should be doing? But actually, what I would encourage everybody to do to really get clear in terms of your idea of success is to actually explore the gap, open the gap up and ask yourself, right, if I don't want to be scrolling on my social media account, but yeah, here I am again, two or three times through the day doing it, why is it that I'm doing it? And don't feel guilty. Don't judge yourself. Just ask yourself why. Because what starts to happen is you start to peel the onion or uncover the layers. And it might boil right down to the fact that you're working from home. You feel isolated. You feel alone. You feel, right, so is there a better way that I can actually tend to that need rather than taking out my phone and scrolling on social media? And trying to get in touch with those needs for me is key to being successful. So as I go through my day, I try and remember and ask myself the question, is there a better way I could be fulfilling this need? And then it helps me stop myself in my tracks if I feel I'm doing something that, listen, do I really, and there's nothing wrong with scrolling through social media, watching TV, we all do it, but it's the idea of, is this really what I want to be doing right now? And I think that's a question we can ask ourselves throughout the day and explore that gap.
That period of reflection, I love that. I think that's really important because it's definitely something I neglected. I was very future focused. I was very like, I get up every day, you'd have your to-do list and often you wouldn't even look back at it. You might go through it, you might not, but you, every day you do the same thing and you'd be like, oh, future. Yeah. But I think that's interesting. And I saw a friend of mine, he shared something pretty good with me recently. He's like, what now? It's like, okay, you've scrolled through social media. Okay. Don't panic. Don't burn down the house. What now? What are you going to do now? Are you going to go on and do some positive or are you going to just go? It's like we were talking about running earlier, you know, oh, I didn't do the 5K. Okay, but what now? Can you go do a 3K? You know, and I thought that was so, I'm just two simple words. What now? I thought that was brilliant. I thought you might enjoy that.
No, I think it's great, Gary, because I think what we need in life is prompts or, you know, what I like to call tripwires. We need things that can effectively remind us. And that one that you've mentioned is a great one. Just asking yourself, what now?
It's simple. That's the little things that bring you back. And as you say, reflect on what's happening, why you're scrolling and that loneliness. I think that's a huge one for people, just trying to be able to connect with people. So what is Fit Vision? Bring me up to date now on what's happening with Fit Vision. Are you fully online?
Yeah, so we're fully online. And what we've actually done through this period is we've brought in, over the past year, I brought in an organizational psychologist into the business, and we've built out some leadership programs in which we actually combine wellness and leadership. So it's more executive wellness and leadership development. And that for us, luckily, has really taken off during COVID. We actually were lucky to do a 12-week program with a company in South Africa over COVID, which just shows you like the possibilities in the time that we're in at the moment. So we have a new online wellness platform as well with Fit Vision. What we've done is we've always wanted to make wellness accessible and understandable and engaging. So we've taken some of the most common myths around wellness and in times of COVID, and we've put that into an online wellness platform for organizations so that their employees can engage in well-being, but engage in it in a fun way. Something that we look at it on the lighter side. Now, all the information is still research-based. It's just the way we actually deliver that information. And that at the moment, luckily, has been a real hit for us over the past couple of months. And then my day-to-day really would involve working a lot one-to-one with executives and coaching in the areas of wellness and leadership development.
Wow. So like the South African story is great. Like you're the second person, your second podcast I've done today, and you're the second person with some good news who actually have done new business since COVID started. I think it's a mindset thing as well, though, because you're outward looking. How did the South African business come about? That's an interesting one.
It's funny because we were promoting on LinkedIn a lot of we call it fit leader. So we've developed a concept around what a fit leader looks like in terms of, you know, debunking some of the myths of what a fit leader would look like. And we did a lot of promotion around LinkedIn with it. Mm-hmm. And the organizational psychologist is South African. So we would have a couple of connections from South Africa. And one of them actually decided, listen, this program sounds like it's a perfect fit for my marketing team at the moment. Would you guys come in and do it for 12 weeks? So it just shows again to any businesses out mm-hmm. there, like, the importance of putting some good content into LinkedIn, offering a bit of value, but also not being afraid to maybe speak about what it is that you're now doing now that things have completely changed.
I think people are starting to realize that LinkedIn is a great one. Just a second, that LinkedIn is a brilliant platform for reaching the right people. And also, yeah, I think just share that, like, even like the podcasts like this are great because just sharing what's really going on, sharing your honest feelings of, yeah, we've had a tough time, but this is why we're shaping it. Mark, where can people learn more about Fit Vision? And then I want to get you to recommend a book is the very last thing.
Very good. So effectively, fitvision.ie is where you'll find all of the information around us. And please connect in with myself on LinkedIn. If you're on LinkedIn as well, I'd be happy to add you to my network and maybe we can strike up a conversation based off today's podcast as well. So yeah, Gary, Fit Vision, really, any handles on Instagram, LinkedIn, Facebook, we're all under Fit Vision.
Perfect. What book has had a big impact on you professionally or personally?
Yeah, I think for me, when it comes to reading, I like books that really make me think, really make me actually step back and reevaluate. And I love James Allen, who's a philosopher, As a Man Thinketh. So it's an old one. It's a very short read, but it's just so relevant when we think about, in today's society, how effectively our biology hasn't caught up with today's society. Mm. But when you read that book, it just makes you take a step back. It makes you realize that actually all the wisdom that we have today, and it's relevant today, has come from people way before our time. And that book for me really makes me think. And I actually read it every now and again, because as I said, it's a short read, but it really starts to spark the internal conversation.
Brilliant. That's a brand new recommendation as well. I've never had that. Definitely never had that one before. So I'm going to check that out. That's brilliant. Listen, Mark, thank you so much.
Thanks, Gary. Thank you very much.
And that was my episode with Mark O'Reilly. I'm sure you took a lot from it. If you took lessons from it, please let me know. Tag us both on social. It does mean a massive amount when people get in touch. People have been getting in touch more and more regularly. And it does mean a huge amount when I get those messages. So please do. And also tag Mark with whatever lessons you took from today. I have one more request for you. One little favor. If you're enjoying the podcast, please do me one favor and share it with one other person. I'm on a mission to get the podcast to 100,000 downloads this year. I know we can do it, but I'm going to need your help. So tag one other person and share it, and hopefully we get to 10,000 monthly downloads and 100,000 before the year is out. I will see you back next Monday for the Idea Lab.